So in 25th, Bhagwan will tell us what is true success. Beautiful shloka, and how wherever you put effort, you will reach that. So that's what Gurudev says. Wherever you put the effort, you will reach. And so that is what in verse number 25. Yanti Devavrata Devan.
Yanti Devavrata Devan.
Pitrun Yanti Pitruvrataha.
Pitrun Yanti Pitruvataha.
Bhutani Yanti Bhutejaha.
Bhutani Yanti Bhutejaha.
Yanti madhya jinopi mam.
Yanti madhya jinopi mam.
You can please mute together. Yanti devavrita devan. Pitrun yanti pitruvritaha. Bhutani yanti bhutejaha. Yanti madhya jinopi mam. So Yanti means they go to. So Devavrita. Devavrita means worshippers of the Devas. So what are Devas? Devas traditionally we understand as gods. You know, God, whether it's Shri, whether it's Indra or Vayu or, you know, Varun Devta and all. Those are the what we understand. So what is the meaning of Deva? We'll talk about. So those who worship the Devas, Yanti, Devavrita, Devan, they reach the Devas. So, if you worship the Devas, the gods, you will reach the gods. Pitrun Yanti Pitruvritaha. So, those who worship Pitra here means the ancestors. You know, there are, like we do Shraddh, you know, for our departed ancestors. We do the offerings of, you know, in fact, currently the Shraddh is going on. And so, people are remembering their ancestors. No, it's not going on now.
It finished 3 days ago. This is Adhik Mahino.
Oh, okay. So it finished. Today. It was going on. Okay. Thank
you. 3 days ago.
Thank you.
Now it's a special Adhik Mahino, Purushottam Mahino.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Yeah, so it was going on, and it is traditional at that month to offer your prayers to the departed souls, particularly our ancestors, parents, grandparents, to remember them and invoke their blessings. And that's why when you go to Bodh Gaya in the banks of the Gangaji, you can offer Shraddha, which is said to be the ultimate. That is the highest Shraddha you can offer. So he says those who worship their ancestors go to ancestors. And what they say is that ancestors are, there are different heavens,
lokas.
And one of them is the where our ancestors who were good people, you know, who were kind, loving, compassionate, if they have been, you know, spiritual people, then they go to those worlds and they enjoy the benefits of those heavens, and then they continue their journey. So that's why we invoke our ancestors' blessings. So Pitru Niyanti Pitru Vritaha. So those who worship the ancestors, they reach that loka, they reach that world. And Bhutani Yanti Bhute Jyaha. Bhuta has many meanings. One of the meaning of Bhuta is the lower powers. You know that people worship some of the lower powers. That is one meaning, but Gurudev has given another meaning. So he says those who worship the Bhutas reach the Bhutas. But Yanti Madhyajino Api Mam. But those who worship me, Madhyajinaha, one who worship me, they come to me. They come to God. So, Devas. Devas, one meaning is, of course, the God. So, if you worship a particular God with sincerity, then that God will manifest and that God will bless you, which is okay. You know, you invoke the Surya Dev, or as we said, Ganesha, or whatever form of God. And if you worship with great sincerity, you will reach that loka. So if you have worshipped Shiva all your life, then you will reach Kailash. You know, or if you worship Bhagwan Sri Vishnu, you will reach Vaikuntha.
and so on. You know, whatever form of God you worship, that is where you will reach. So that is what Yanti Deva Vrita Devan. So those who worship gods in a particular way will reach those gods. But Gurudev in his commentary also says that Deva in Sanskrit has a second meaning, which means the senses. Because the senses illumine. So Deva means the sense organs that illumine certain sense objects. So that means the eyes illumine the sight. So it is with my eyes I can see everything, and that becomes for me the knowledge through the eyes. Or through the ears I can listen to the sounds, the music. Through the tongue I can taste, the nose I can smell, the skin I can touch. So devas are the senses. So by senses, what they mean is this world that I perceive. The world that I see, hear, smell, taste and touch. So if that is your focus, where you want to worship the world, then you will reach that. So whatever you worship, that you reach. Yanti Deva Vrita Devan. Then he says, Pitrun Yanti Pitru Vritaha. Those who worship the ancestors will get the blessings of the ancestors, and that is wonderful. But that is all they will get. And so ancestors, Gurudev in his commentary says that what they mean by ancestors, one is of course our parents, grandparents who have departed, but it also means our ancient culture, because our parents, grandparents represent our culture, right? Our traditions, like whatever has come down, say from Jesus, it has come down, Christianity, from Hinduism has come down, from all the, you know, from the Vedas. So that is our culture, our traditions, our dynasty, whatever. So that is what when we do, that means I am invoking that, and I am maintaining all the good qualities in my culture. That is why Gurudev insisted that we do Balvihar, where our children are taught our values, our culture, so that this culture should continue, this great tradition, Vedic tradition that has come down to us for thousands of years, should not be allowed to perish. And that is why this teaching is very important, not only for us to study, but to teach to our children, grandchildren, and try to pass on this knowledge. Mm-hmm. So our seniors need to be respected, need to be revered, though not only those who have passed, but those who are with us. We have to make sure we take care of them, we respect them, and that is a great service, that is a great, because that is called Pitru Seva, and that is required in all religions, in all faiths. So seniors need to be revered. Talking about seniors, there were these two ladies, Elizabeth and Rose, and they were friends for 30 years. And every day they would meet in one or the other's house, have coffee, have breakfast, and talk for hour, 2 hours. And so they both became quite old. And one day Elizabeth tells Rose, she says, you know, Rose, she didn't say Rose. She says, you know, I'm sorry to say, but I know we have been friends for 30 years, but I have forgotten your name. I don't remember your name. I know you are my best friend and I meet you every day, but I'm so sorry, I apologize, but I really don't remember your name. Can you please tell me your name? So Rose looks at her and glares at her, and she's silent for a minute, and then she says, how soon do you need to know that? She had forgotten her own name. So not that we should make fun, because you and I, we are getting very close to that age. And so some youngster will be making fun of us. But the point is that that is how the culture is maintained. You know, from senior it comes down. That's why we chant the prayer, Sadashiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Paryantam Vande Guru Paramparam. So I prostrate to the Guru Parampara that started from the Lord Shiva, then came to Shankaracharya ji, and came to Tapovan Maharaj, to our Gurudev, whoever our Guru is. It here we worship, we revere Swami Chinmayananda, but whoever our teacher, our Guru is, so through that Guru, through that teacher, I am getting this knowledge. So I prostrate to the Guru Shishya Parampara, that this knowledge has. So that's what they say, Dev Pitru Niyanti, Pitru Vritaha, means those who worship the Pitras, they should worship it as the Guru Parampara, that from which all this knowledge has come. Then Bhutani Yanti Bhute Jyaha. So Bhuta, one meaning of Bhuta is the lower beings, you know, the ghosts, goblins, and demons and all, and there is a whole group of people who worship the lower forms, and these are powers, they have a lot of powers, and if you can invoke those powers, actually, you know, they can do harm. So if you invoke that, then Lord says you reach that, so you reach a zone of fear, and you know, because you are so fearful, because these are powers. Another meaning of Bhuta, which is given by Gurudev in his commentary, he says Bhuta is these Pancha Mahabhutas, these five elements. So from these five elements, this whole universe has been created. So it's air, space, fire, water, earth. So by five elements, what he means is whatever you see and all the sciences, the science of medicine and engineering and computers and whatever science is, botany, zoology, everything is relates to the Pancha Mahabhutas. So those who worship God in this, that you know, medicine is my God, or engineering is my God, or accounting, so that is called worshiping those celestial, the world in the form of this, all these objects that we are seeing. So in the Ramayana, when you see the three brothers, Ravana's younger brother was Kumbhakarna, and then his other brother was Vibhishan. They were both younger to him. So these three represent the three aspects. Vibhishan represents tamas, because he was lazy, he would sleep for 6 months. Kumbhakarna represents tamas. Then Ravana represents rajas, activity, selfishness, and Vibhishana represents sattva, the purity, because Vibhishana was always approaching Ram for help. So also here, those who worship the lower forces are considered tamasic, those who worship worldly powers are considered rajasic, but those who worship God are considered sattvic. But God is Trigunatita. He is beyond all three. The gunas, so from tamas we should go to rajas, which is activity, from laziness, from rajas go to sattva, purity, and ultimately go beyond these three gunas to that which is beyond. So that's why they say that this is a very practical chapter, because it tells us stepwise how to progress. Then somebody may ask, you know, you have worked 55 years in your life. You are now 55, 60 years old. What have you become? He says, I have become CEO of this big company. Now, do you think you have accomplished? He says, yep, I have. I'm CEO. I am, you know, the boss of my company. I make so much money. I have a big house. I have, you know, swimming pool. I have this. I have that. I have millions in the bank. But a wise person may ask, if you had spent these 55 years in a spiritual path, where would you have been by now? Where would you have reached if you had spent 55 years of your life working in that direction? So that is what they are saying, that true progress, because even this worldly progress, even the CEO maybe have millions, but he's always worried. He has, because, oh, why? Because this guy today is my friend. Tomorrow he'll undercut me and try to get my job, or he'll take away my business, or this vice president. So he's always, but if we have progressed spiritually, so they say true success, if you have spent 75, 80 years of your life and have not progressed towards God, your life is a waste. It's a failure. No matter how much you have accomplished, you may even become the president of the United States, you may become the, you know, anything. You may become Bill Gates, or you may, whatever you have progressed is good, but it does not compare with what a spiritual master has progressed. So true progress is only spiritual. True success is only spiritual. And that is what we have to understand, that if I want to be successful, I have to be successful in this field. We can say, okay, I already am, say, 50, 60, 70, that's okay. But from now onward, that has to be my goal. And even our children, you know, we focus on, okay, what are his grades and what college they got in and what career they have. That's very good. Nothing wrong with that. But is that true progress? What would we want our child to be? Say there is one child who's very selfish, very dishonest, very crooked, and he comes first in the class and he gets, you know, he's very successful in business and he's very powerful. And another child who is not that successful materially, but is a good person. He's a good person. He's kind, he's loving, he's compassionate, he's honest. Which child would you want? Would you want a child who is, you know, the richest in the town, or would you want a child who is good? He may not be that successful. So that is what our idea of success is very limited. That if he is successful in the world, he's successful. If he's not, he's useless. And that's how we gauge ourselves, and that's how we judge others. Oh, this person, he has a big house, so then he must be good. And this person, theek hai, you know, he's okay. So that's what the Bhagavan says, that judge people on how close they have come to me, not how much they have progressed. That's what even Kabir Das Ji says, that God and I are one. Hari hai or main hai. If Hari is there, I am not there. If I am there, Hari is not. So this I, this ego, has to be separated, where I and God are one. That's why he says, Prem Gali Badi Sankri, the path of love is very narrow. Either I can be there or God can be there. I and God both cannot be, because I means there's limited I. So that understanding is that. That's why Bhagavan says, if you, whatever you worship in life, you will get. But if you worship me, you will come to me. So that's what is the essence of these three verses, that whoever you worship, ultimately all prayers come to me, because I am the source of everything. So make me your primary goal. Yes, we have to take care of our things and all that, but that is not my primary purpose in life. That is not why I have taken human birth. I have not taken human birth to accumulate more. I have taken human birth to get closer to God. And if I don't do that, my life is a waste. So that is the essence of these three verses. Next week, Bhagavan Sri Krishna will tell us how to worship him. How to worship is most beautiful shloka next week, the first one. Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam. So we'll talk about that. Thank you very much. We have a few minutes. Please, if you come up with any questions, any disagreements, any comments, any ideas.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes I get a little confused between meditation and worship. And, you know, we're doing the Dirdusha right. Towards the end, and we're talking about, you know, the two forms, the internal and the external forms of meditation. And I just kept thinking about this while you were talking about external meditation with an object, and I find myself wondering how that's, you know, like if you are using an idol for that external meditation with an object, is that different than worship?
No, it's a very good question. Thank you for asking. So they say in worship, I talk to God. In meditation, God talks to me. In one line, that is the answer. So what it means is that when you worship God as an object, and that is very good, but ultimately that God that I am seeing outside is also my true nature. So when I meditate, that's why Bhagavan Sri Krishna in the 6th chapter, he says, Atma samstham mana kritva na kinchit api chintayet. So what it means is that this mind, which at this moment is focused on external things, it could be a form of God, it could be my children, could be my work or whatever. So you collect the mind from all those and place it in the self. Atma, in the Atma, the self. And then once you place your mind, collect it from everywhere, wherever my mind is going, that's why we chant the mantra in Om Namah Shivaya or do the beads or watch the breath or, you know, whatever techniques we use for meditation. So you collect the mind from everywhere and center it in the self within. And then he says, na kinchit api chintayet. Now when we think of na kinchit, that means make the mind completely still. And the mind will not become completely still. The mind will need something to move. So then you tell the mind that I am that self. I am that consciousness. That is in inner meditation. So from outside, you take it inside and then say that self is me. Aham Brahmasmi. And there are a lot of nice shlokas we have, like Nirvan Shatkam. You know, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not the intellect, but I am that Chidananda Rupaha Shivoham Shivoham. And then there is, you know, Aham Evaha Mavyayayaha, you know, I am, or then in Jati Niti, in Vivek Chudamani. So taking any of these passages and then using them to go, or Prata Smarami, that is Shankaracharya Ji's beautiful shlokas, if you can Google that, Prata Smarami, what do I remember in the morning? So that should be your meditation. Meditation from outside should go to inside, and ultimately that is me. That understanding will, when it happens, then that is the final conclusion of the meditation. So worship is outside, and that is very good. You worship God, you go to the temple or church and you light a candle or offer flowers. But ultimately you have to discover God's presence within. So that is the difference between worship and meditation.
Well, I have one more thing that came that I was thinking about.
Okay.
I you read a lot these days about the idea that science has become a form of religion. And you kind of mentioned that, but I've thought about that a lot. I mean, I've been thinking about it aside from this class, and then I thought about that while you were talking too. And in a rather atheistic society that
right.
Western society has become, it's like we all need a God, and so now people are worshiping science.
So what do you think about that?
Well, I think science is not a very good God. I think it's very fallible. It's
true.
It's like anything in life. It's not a substratum.
Yes, yes, very true. So science is always changing. See, we used to believe the earth is flat. Then somebody tried to say the earth is round and they killed him. Because he said, and then they used to say that the earth is the center and the whole universe revolves around us. And the one who said it was poisoned. So the point is that science changed. And whatever is changing cannot be God. That's why they say God is avyayam. It is immutable. And not only that, but was always there. Always there, is there, and always will be there. Science was not always there. Physics, chemistry, you know, they all started at a particular time. And so science is explains what the world is, what we see, what we experience. And science has its own role. I'm not saying science is not important. That's all our progress that we have made in this lifetime and all these hundreds of years is because of science. We can fly, we can go to the Mars, we can do, you know, all the computers and all the knowledge. So science has its role. But science cannot become God. Where people say, you know, the Big Bang theory, you know, the world started with the Big Bang. Okay, we say Big Bang is true. But where did the energy for the Big Bang come from? You know, bang means something had to explode and there had to be energy. So that energy is God, and that's what we say. So somebody says, I don't believe in ultimate cause has to be there, right? We say, I don't believe in a form, I don't believe in Krishna, Ram. Okay, that's fine, but do you believe in energy? Yes. Do you believe that there is a cause and an effect, that if there is an effect, there has to be a cause? Yes. So that cause is God. That's what we say, the ultimate cause, which is the uncaused cause, which is the origin of everything. So that is how we worship God. And so that is...
People who worship science, they think they can be the witness of God. They can be the witness of the Shakti.
Right, right, right. Yeah, so that is ignorance. That's why it says, avidhi purvakam, by wrong methods. So worshipping science, worshipping materialism, you know, all of these take you in the wrong direction. Thank you. Anything else?
I just want to say something. The science is like an objective science. It never can be subjective, which is God is.
Right. Right.
The science of sciences.
Yeah, so what she said is, it is the subject. It is the knower. The knower within me, the Sakshi within me that knows everything, including knows my body, my mind, my thoughts, and knows the whole world, is that Sakshi is the one that knows everything. So science will take you to seeing the objects, okay, through my microscope, through telescope, all the objects, as Kusum said. But spirituality takes you to the subject, who is the knower of everything. So from the object, you go to the subject. So that is the difference between science and spirituality.
It's
Thank you.
So-called science of soul.
Yeah.
Science of sciences.
Science of sciences, science of the soul. These
we
are all different words.
We have a book called Science of Sciences.
Right. There's a book in the library in the mission called Science of Sciences, which talks about the connection between science and spirituality. It's available if somebody wants.
Are the sacred texts somehow connected with Patanjali Sutra?
Patanjali.
Oh yeah, Patanjali sutras, those, you know, those eight, they are all very connected, where you do yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyan, samadhi. So these are sequential ways to take us to the truth. Patanjali sutras are very good.
Disciplines.
And the disciplines that, you know, you do yoga, you do breathing, and then you do meditation, and then you become one. That merger is, samadhi is where you become one, but ultimately that merger has to happen within. So Patanjali's Mahasutras, Patanjali Sutras, the Ashtang Yoga, if you practice, that's very good. Because Yama Niyama teaches us how to live a life of self-control, how to, you know, relate
Dharma.
With others, and how to withdraw from unnecessary things, and Pratyahara and Dharana, and hold on to what is important. So yeah, the Patanjali sutras are very good. Patanjali actually was a great rishi. He not only wrote these sutras, he wrote commentaries on many of the Vedic mantras. He was a great scholar. Tremendous his contribution to our spiritual heritage is tremendous. It's huge. He has written commentaries on grammar. You know, Panini was the grammarian. And Patanjali has written commentaries on Panini's grammar. So amazing individual he was. Great rishi, yes. That's why we call him Maharshi. Maharishi, a great rishi. Great seer of the truth. Yes. So they all take us upward. And it doesn't matter which path you take, but you have to do it sincerely and take it all the way to the end, to samadhi, where then you and God become one. Then you are not separate. So that I has to disappear, that little I, you know, that I call myself Daniela, that has to disappear. And that oneness I have to reach, Advaita, where there are no two. As
you can do it.
Okay. Gurudev's Aarti. Okay, thank you. So next week you can chant. So we'll do the Aarti now. And then we'll do the closing prayers.
आरती श्री चिन्मय सद्गुरु की देव्य रूप मूरति करुणा की आरती सद्गुरु की चरणों में उनके शांति समाए, शरणागत की भ्रांति मिटाए, पाप ताप संताप हरण की आरती श्री चिन्मय सद्गुरु की, आरती सद्गुरु की। वेद उपनिषद गीता को गाया, धर्म सनातन फिर से जगाया, शुद्ध नीति प्रीति शंकर की आरती श्री चिन्मय सद्गुरु की, आरती सद्गुरु की। सिद्ध बाड़ी की तपो भूमि में नित्य विराजे गुरु हमारे, भक्त हृदय आनंद श्रोत्र की आरती श्री चिन्मय सद्गुरु की, आरती सद्गुरु की, आरती सद्गुरु की।
बोलिए सद्गुरुनाथ महाराज की जय।
काये न वाचा मनसेन्द्रियैर्वा बुद्ध्यात्मना वा प्रकृते स्वभावात् करोमि यद्यत् सकलं परस्मै नारायणायेति समर्पयामि, नारायणायेति समर्पयामि। सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः, सर्वे सन्तु निरामयाः, सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु, मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत्। ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय, तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय, मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ।
Everybody can just take the aarti. Kusum, if you can just show it. Everybody can take that. And we'll see you next week. Thank you so much. Hari Om.